én kofferidem és ne zsáj. Lepáté samostám, mi van tiszte dolgok, vechodníke, ne. Tom, dolgok, szavrát, a patrőr, ne. Én ezt perintem, tam, frem, a patrőr, ne. Patrőr, dolgok, zagledam, Madonna, en ošvan.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad, mlad in to je siv, siv, ne ta nemški občaj, črn pa to ne, prav tista prava volk, krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa, na Radiju Študent.
Ekvador. Odprto znanje in skupnostna ekonomija. V tokratnem Zeitgeistu bomo poskušali predstaviti projekt, ki je edinstven na svetovni ravni ekonomsko-političnega miljeja. Kot bomo videli, mu originalnosti ni pripisovati predvsem na ravni ideje, ampak prej načinu in pristopu, na katero se jo skuša realizirati. Govorili bomo o Free Libre Open Knowledge Society, krajše Flock Society, ki je interaktiven projekt med ekvadorsko vlado, tamkajšnjimi institucijami in državljani ter hekerji na globalni ravni, znanstveniki, ekonomisti, pravniki, vsemi vmes ter mrežavljani, kot bi lahko prevedli angliško skovanko netizen. Ideja Flocka torej stavi na to, da je možna drugačna ekonomsko-politična situacija, namreč družba prostega, odprtega znanja. V osnovi lahko izpostavimo dva tesno povezana principa, ali morda bolje aksioma, ki ju predpostavlja Flock. Povzemajo geslo, demokracija brez demokratične produkcije ne obstaja. Na ravni političnega se stremi k absolutni participaciji vsakega na vseh področjih človeškega delovanja, pri čemer politično ni strogo ločeno od ekonomskega. Produkcija pa usporedno poteka po istem načelu s tem, da se subjektivna raven motivacije oziroma želje ne reducira na logiko profita, abstraktnega presežka. Izhaja namreč iz prepričanja, da je mogoče ustvarjati skupno, brez začaranosti s presežno vrednostjo in onstran ideologije lastnega interesa. Kot rečeno, ideja ni nova. Sledimo ji lahko od prvih idej komunizma, pri čemer so se zgodovinski centralno vodeni sistemi izkazali za precej nedemokratične in usporedno skozi anarhistične poskuse horizontalne participatorne organiziranosti. Druga, nekoliko mlajša praksa izhaja iz hekerske kulture, ki se rodi z invencijo interneta. Infrastruktura, ki omogoča mrežno komunikacijo, je že v 60-ih navdajala hekerske pionirje z optimizmom, da se obeta radikalna sprememba družbe. Govorili so o novi, odprti, demokratični, globalni, postkapitalistični, samoregulirajoči se družbi. Vendar se je internet v zadnjem dobrem desetletju močno zaprl, regulacija v korist kapitala se bohoti, platforme za mrežno komunikacijo se izrabljajo za vse bolj sofisticirane nadzore in marketinške prijeme. Kakorkoli že. Ideja je živa in iščejo se nove raznolike poti za njeno realizacijo. Ob raziskovanju ideje in prakse projekta Flock Society smo naleteli na različne termine, ki označujejo ekonomijo, ki ni vezana na prosti trg in tudi ne regulirana skozi državni birokratski aparat. Najti je mogoče označevalce, kot so skupnostna ekonomija. ekonomija družbenega znanja, kar ne smemo mešati z idejo družbe znanja, seveda. Peer-to-peer ekonomija in ekonomija sodelitve. Vodja raziskovalne skupine pri projektu Flock Society je Michel Bowens, na Tajvanu živeči Belgijec, ki je tudi ustanovitelj Peer-to-peer fundacije. Z njim smo govorili o različnih aspektih projekta. Začenjamo z različnimi poimenovanji, tako imenovane nove ekonomije in njihovimi precej prekrivajočimi se pomeni.
There's two concepts that are being used here in Ecuador. And one is from the government itself. It's from René Ramírez. He's the secretary or the minister of an organism called SENESCYT, SENESCYT, which is like the Department of Science, Technology and Innovation. And he uses the term social knowledge economy. So knowledge which is social, a knowledge which can be shared. And he's been talking about this, you know, for a few years already. And some of the first manifestation was a free software legislation in Ecuador that tells the government offices to use free software. And we also just published, the government just published something called the Organic Code for the Social Knowledge Economy, which is a framing of this issue. And of course, and so, you know, it means how to get towards shareable knowledge. And then the second term that is used is by the people who lead our project, and these are people from Spain that originally are from the 15M movement, and they were the people who actually designed the communication infrastructure, you know, for Occupy, 15M, and things like that, at least parts of it. And they talk about FLOC. So that means free, Libra, open knowledge-based society. Finally, when I came on board as a director of research, I used the paradigm of peer-to-peer, which is basically means any social system where anybody is free to contribute and where you create a universal resource which everybody can use. So it's a kind of a social dynamic where basically everybody can participate and everybody can share in the knowledge. So as you can see, those three things are really related, right? And you can also use words like the sharing economy or the commons economy. So different people coming from different perspectives use slightly different vocabulary, but they really mean more or less the same thing. It's about the sharing. At the very least, it's about the sharing of knowledge, science, technology, culture. So a resource that is by nature abundant should not be kept artificially scarce. That's the key thesis, right? There is no reason that if you invent something that can save the world or can save the health or the lives of millions of people, that because you want to have a super profit on it, then other people should die for that. You know, which is, for example, the case with AIDS, where medications which are fairly cheap to produce are sold, you know, with a few thousand percent extra to maintain super profits for pharmaceutical industries. So this is kind of the general argument that, you know, presides here. And the idea, of course, is that Ecuador is also, you know, still in a pretty much a colonial situation where they export raw material and unprocessed goods with a low margin, but they have to buy consumer and production goods from the West at a high margin. And if you know a bit about open source hardware, you know, the average cost of open hardware is about 1/8 of its equivalent in proprietary hardware. Right? So imagine if a country would do that systematically. For example, we could take the example of open source scientific laboratories. This is actually a book called Open Source Labs by Joshua Pierce. And this book shows that for nearly every scientific instrument, there is an open hardware equivalent at about 1/8 of the cost.
Flock Society projekt in država. Vloga države v skupnostni ekonomiji je drugačna na eni strani od neoliberalnega modela, pri katerem je ta v namen promocije in varstva čedalje bolj koncentrirane privatne lastnine, vedno na shujševalni kuri, in na drugi strani od socialne države, če ta danes sploh še obstaja, ki čeprav prerasporeja bogatstvo z birokratskimi mehanizmi usmerja večji del posameznikovega delovanja.
We are arguing for a new type of state, but you know, I would be premature to say that it already exists. So this is, as you may know, that Ecuador went through a social upheaval a few years ago, and it brought to power something that's called themselves, you know, the Citizens' Revolution. And you know, it's a coalition of different movements from the left and the right. But they all agreed that the former neoliberal system, where you know the free market rules everything, was not a good thing for Ecuador. If you look at the general situation in Latin America in the 80s and the 90s, you know it's very negative. There's more poverty, more illiteracy than before. So basically, the first priority of these new movements, pretty much all over the continent, was actually to restore the state. And it has some advantages in terms of redistribution of resources and a more egalitarian society, but it's also still pretty much a bureaucratic state. It's a directive bureaucratic state. And what peer-to-peer, and the reason they do this is because they don't have a welfare state or welfare society yet, and this is what, you know, their priority is to create is. But our researchers are mostly Europeans and North American researchers, and we have a different historical experience because we already have, you know, a welfare state and a welfare society, even though it's in danger. But so we talk about changing the notion of the state towards a partner state. And what is a partner state? It's a model of the state which enables and empowers autonomous social production, so which enables and empowers social knowledge and the modalities of production that go with it. So, for example, if you would look at healthcare, what we would say is, well, okay, the state could either, you have either the private model or the state model, but why can't the state fund public health for everyone, but then contract with, you know, social bodies, basically, right? So we call this the commonification of social services or the commonification of public services. This is a model which already exists, for example, in the north of Italy, in the field of social care, where instead of the government directing the care, you have huge co-ops, which are multi-stakeholder co-ops involving the doctors, the nurses, the patients, and the funding mechanisms, which is the state. So this is the kind of thing we are looking for. We are looking for a new model of the state where you do have public services. There is, you know, like there is a really strong civic infrastructure which allows people to have education, food, and to become fully participative citizens, but without the bureaucratic and authoritarian side effects that the classic state model has. But you have to understand, these are our proposals. They're based on real experiences abroad, but we cannot claim that this is already the case. Right, we are at this stage, we're at the stage of researching and proposing.
On the first part of the journey, I was looking at all the life. There were plants and birds and rocks and things. There was sand and hills and rain. The first thing I met was a fly with a buzz and the sky with no clouds. The heat was hot and the ground was dry, but the air was full of sound. I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain.
La 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 After 3 days in the desert fun, I was looking at a riverbed, and the story it told of a river that flowed made me sad to think it was dead. You see, I've been through the desert on a horse with no name. It felt good to be out of the rain. In the desert, you can't remember your name, 'cause there ain't no one for to give you no pain. La 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 la.
Peer-to-peer ekonomija in demokracija. Demokracija brez demokratične produkcije ne obstaja, je geslo, ki je neposredno povezano s politično-ekonomskimi idejami peer-to-peera. Če je, vsaj kot mislijo nekateri zagovorniki posredne ali neposredne demokracije, politično radikalno drugačno od ekonomskega, potem peer-to-peer ne predstavlja dovolj čiste pozicije. Michel Bowens, ki svojo peer-to-peer fundacijo v novih produkcijskih praksah vidi širše možnosti človeške emancipacije, te dve sferi sicer ločuje, vendar v sodobni sestavljenosti družbe prepoznava njuno prepletenost.
I see this in the following way. So in the early tribal period, when people lived in small communities under 150 people, this is called a Dunbar number. And it basically says that every human can remember and trust 150 people. This is a cognitive limit. So when you scale, you can't do it. You can't have peer-to-peer relationships at scale, because the transaction, communication, and coordination costs are too expensive. So this is a kind of a tragedy of mankind, is when we scaled, we moved to hierarchy, and we moved to coercion, right? We moved to slavery, serfdom, and the wage condition where you're dependent on somebody else to survive. And this has a lot to do with, in my view, with the transaction cost of the economy. There's just, if you want to scale, there's no other choice. And if somebody scales and you don't scale, the people who don't scale lose. So it's kind of like a tragedy, if you like. It's the tragedy of human history. What I'm saying, and I call this peak hierarchy, is that today with the internet, we can actually scale these peer-to-peer relationships. And we can prove this. If you look at the average number of a team in Linux, it's 4 people. In Wikipedia, it's 1 person, right? So you have these very complex social systems that have outperformed their industrial era competitors. So it works better, and it actually works according to the peer-to-peer logic. It's a logic of self-allocation, right? In some aspects, it's already post-democratic. If you look at an peer production in software or open hardware, I don't tell you what to do. You look at what needs to be done, and if you have the right skills, you can say, I'm going to do this particular part of the project. So there is a lot of freedom, individual freedom in the new system, which is, I think, very interesting. But if you look at a bit deeper, you could say that where there is abundance, you don't need democracy. You just let people choose because there is enough for everyone. But where you have scarcity, you need an allocation system. And that can be hierarchical, democratic, or the market. And what we see happening in peer production is that most of these free software and hardware communities, they create a new type of foundation. The GNOME Foundation, the Perl Foundation, the Wikimedia Foundation, the Bitcoin Foundation. And these are not command structures, they are quality control structures. And they are mostly democratic. The people vote, choose their representatives. So this is what I like about the model of peer production, is that you could theoretically combine free self-allocation, democratic control, and you could create co-ops where you actually also have economic democracy where you operate on the market, you could use the cooperative model. This is not happening at big scale yet, because most young people who do free software think about startups. But my point of view is that we have this historic occasion, you know, to combine, let's say, common spear production in the fields of abundance, knowledge, with cooperative production in the field of material production. And that's a kind of political aspect of the work here in Ecuador, where the country is looking for, you know, what it calls post-capitalist dynamics. So we're trying to look at what works. We're trying to, you know, propose experimental practices in this field.
Postkapitalistična dinamika, kot Bowne označi celoto precej raznovrstnih načinov peer-to-peer produkcije, pa v sebi ne odgovarja na razredno vprašanje. Kritiki tako svarijo pred vzpostavitvijo novih, drugačnih izključevanj zaradi nezbožnosti participacije, bodi si zaradi izobrazbe, bodi si zaradi omejenega dostopa do interneta ali drugih načinov povezovanja.
I actually agree with that critique. So if you have a commons of free software, you know, it's open to everyone, right? So structurally, there's no constraints within that new system for people to contribute. But of course, it never operates in a vacuum. And that's the problem. So even if you have a thriving open source community producing Linux, well, there's mostly men involved. And why is that? Not because of the structural constraints of peer production, but because you're operating in a society where that happens to be the case, that it's mostly males who do software. So this is why the project in Ecuador is also a political project. We're talking about a partner state, we're talking about ethical economy, we're talking about level playing fields. And so I think that the critics are right. If we only have peer production and we don't change anything else, this will not solve the issue, right? Think about the invention of literacy. When in the 16th century we have printing and we have the potential of increasing literacy, but what is the short-term effect? The short-term effect is that people who can read have even more advantages compared to the people who can't read, right? So even though this was an emancipatory technology, it took time for social movements to claim, to argue for public education, generalized literacy. This was not done automatically. It's not because you have a printing press that everybody can read. You have to make a social effort to teach reading to everyone. And I think the same is true for peer-to-peer. And that's why peer-to-peer is also a political project. It's if we want everyone to enjoy these privileges and this new way of working together, then we also need to work on social structures, we need to work on education, we need to work on many, many different things to level the playing field and to avoid that there is a new cognitive elite that functions within those peer production environments, but that doesn't care about what's happening around it.
Ekonomija skupnega, nove tehnologije in starosevci. V poročilu o raziskavah in načrtih, ki ga je pripravil Ekvadorski nacionalni inštitut za napredne študije, piše, navajamo, v tem predlogu konvergirata dva velika politična projekta, Buen Vivir, dobro življenje, ekvadorske državljanske revolucije na eni strani ter Free Culture and Software Movement na drugi. Prvi vzame za osnovo državljanske revolucije andski staroselski koncept Sumak Jačaj, dobro znanje. Z njim je opredeljena in razvita družbena transformacija, ki temelji na ravnovesnem odnosu med naravo in človekom, pri čemer je osebni razvoj mogoč brez izključitve ali podreditve narave oziroma drugega človeka. Drugi koncept izhaja iz hackerske kulture, copyleft in peer-to-peer gibanja ter obrambe skupnega v tehnološki eri. demokratizacija znanja in tehnologije skozi elektronske mreže in družbeno opolnomočenje.
The reason that Ecuador and Andean countries are interested in this is first of all that they have substantial indigenous populations. In Ecuador it's 25%, and most of the rest of the population is a mestizo population, but in Bolivia it's even higher. And what these peoples do is they actually already know how to live in relative harmony with their environment, right? And they have a non-accumulative value system. And so the idea of the social knowledge economy is very much related to this idea of we have to live in harmony with the environment, have a lighter footprint on the environment, but at the same time, we have to become culturally, scientifically, technologically richer. And this is basically what traditional people are already doing. So the society, the politics of Ecuador want to learn from this kind of pre-industrial value system, because they want to go to a post-industrial value system, which is pretty much related to life before industrialization. So that's one point. The second point is more pragmatic. We are working on trying to find solutions so that traditional people are not afraid to share their knowledge. You must be aware of this, you know, this notion of biopiracy, where because the knowledge is not protected, you know, they come in, go to the forest, take plants, talk to the shamans, and then they disappear, and then there is a new medicine, and it makes the pharmaceutical companies very rich, but the traditional people are not getting anything from it. And so we are trying to, you know, in dialogue with traditional people, is to think about a new type of licensing, which is based, you know, which we call reciprocity-based licensing. It's a bit technical, but the current wave of open licenses that are using free software allow anyone to use the common pool without reciprocity. And we believe this is not appropriate for traditional knowledge. That should be special protections. And the basic rule would be, if you use our medicines for the benefit of humanity, but you are the only ones benefiting from it, then this is not right. We should also share in the benefits of this, use of our knowledge. So this is one of the key issues in the Flock Transition Program, is to find a way that traditional communities can share without fearing to be pirated, basically.
Odprta globalna oblikovalska skupnost in lokalne mikrodelavnice. Ekvador, ki je še vedno v primežu neokolonialnih oblastnih razmerij, je predvsem izvoznik relativno poceni surovin na eni strani in uvoznik proizvodov s tako imenovano visoko dodano vrednostjo. Eno pomembnih vprašanj je tako, kako se izviti iz takšnega asimetričnega odnosa. Iz ideje sharing economy oziroma ekonomije sodeljenja se že nekaj časa porajajo prakse, ki bi lahko delovale kot protiutež na patentih in koncentraciji kapitala slonečih multikorporacijskih modelih.
The way to imagine this is that you have on the one hand a global, potentially global open design community. So if you have farm hack, as long as you know English and you know farming, you can contribute. It doesn't matter where you live, right? It's an American project, but it doesn't prohibit anybody else from contributing to it. So it's, in a sense, a global open design community. Then you combine this with local open distributed manufacturing. So you have a set of micro factories where using a new type of machinery that is based on 3D printing, where you can actually print objects directly from the computer. So you can start making agricultural machines locally and not be dependent on big agribusiness. This is a huge problem for small and indigenous farmers in Ecuador, where, you know, the big companies that make the tractors don't make them for small farmers. They make them for big farmers. So if you want these machines, you go into debt, and basically if you don't scale, you die. You know, you cannot survive. In this new model, even if you're a small farmer, you can start co-designing and adapting machines to your needs, right? So it's really global local, and that wasn't possible before. Is that you can combine local adaptations, but you can work together with people in the whole world. And potentially in the case of Ecuador, you know, we're thinking that this could create a new domestic industry of agricultural machines that would make the country a lot less dependent on buying these very expensive, you know, proprietary machines that also have another logic. They have a logic of bigness. And we believe that we should experiment with these new models to see if that can maintain, you know, the smallholding farms, which, if you look at the nutritional basis, they're more productive than big farms. Not in monetary terms, but in terms of, like, how many vitamins and nutrients do you produce on an acre of ground, then the small holding farmers are more productive than agribusiness.
Na strani Radia Študent, kjer se bo nahajal današnji Zeitgeist, boste lahko našli še nekaj zanimivih internetnih strani na temo peer-to-peer ekonomije, ekonomije skupnega, projekta Flock Society in podobnih. Po duhu časa porajajočih se novih produkcijskih načinov in samoorganizacije se je z Mišelom Bauensom sprehajal Gregor. Tehniciral je Jan, tekst sem bral Biga.
In ko pridem jaz nazaj, ne pa te samo ostanemo tiste dolge hodnike, ne? Tam dol so vrata, pa tre vrata, ne. In jaz prijem tam, pa tre vrata, pa ne vidiš. Pa tam dol zagledam Madonna in ošla.
Riz.
Je bil pa lep, mlad in tudi siv. Siv, ne ta nemški očaj, ne črn pa to, ne. Prav tista prava volk, ne. Krasen.
Radijske zgodbe o ljudih, ki ustvarjajo duh časa. Na Radiu Študent.